afternoon, everybody. We will get the meeting called to order. First order of business today is approving the minutes from March 13th. Representative Kraft, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have. I move their approval.
Great. Any discussion to the minutes from March 13th? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. And we've got a few bills on the agenda today. First up is House File 4659. Representative Berg, welcome to committee. I will go ahead and move House File 4659 be re-referred to the Committee on Labor and Industry. So with that, welcome to committee, Representative Berg. Go ahead and
thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. As you know, the state of Minnesota is making significant investments to fund broadband deployment, and we are about to receive a substantial one-time infusion from the federal government to help assure all Minnesota homes and businesses have access to high-speed broadband in all corners of the state. It is critically important that we get this right. We need to ensure that not only are we investing in high-quality, reliable broadband infrastructure, but that the work is done safely and in a manner that develops the skilled workforce that will continue building, maintaining, upgrading, and replacing broadband infrastructure for decades to come. House File 4659 establishes guardrails to ensure that broadband is not being deployed at the expense of worker safety, public safety, or in ways that compromise critical electric, gas, water, and telecommunications infrastructure. This bill raises quality and safety standards, enhances training, reduces workforce turnover, and ensures that our investments in broadband deliver middle-class jobs. Madam Chair, there are two provisions of House File 4659, most relevant to Climate and Energy Committee, that brings us before you today. First, Section 3 establishes a basic safety training standard for the installation of broadband similar to what exists today for pipe laying in Minnesota. And Section 4 would hold bad actors accountable for damage to critical underground utility infrastructure when broadband is installed. And Madam Chair, I have two testifiers who will speak further to the bill.
Great. First up, we have Kevin Pranis, who marketing manager for LIUNA. Welcome to committee, Mr. Pranis. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Akam and committee members. Keep this short. Kevin Pranis on behalf of LIUNA, Minnesota, North Dakota. We represent 14,000 skilled construction laborers across the two states, building a wide variety of infrastructure. The bill that Representative Berg has brought today is a critical priority for us. Just to give a brief background for the committee, our organization, you know, partly in response to the historic levels of broadband investment that we worked very hard to secure as part of the federal infrastructure bill. We wanted to look at the conditions in the broadband industry and make sure that that money could be spent well, and that we were that it was creating high quality jobs, but also that it was operating safely. And so we spent about a year investigating. We interviewed dozens of workers, talked to contractors, we talked to utilities, we observed construction on job sites, and what we found is hard workers committed to doing a good job, taking pride in their work. We also found contractors that were responsible and, again, you know, trying to safely and effectively build this infrastructure. But we also discovered that there were some real gaps. And in many cases, what we thought was an unsafe rush, an undue pressure, we saw incredibly low levels of or high levels of turnover within the industry. And in fact, of all the different parts of the construction industry where we deal with workers, which are extensive, we've never run across such high turnover rates. The typical worker that we interviewed was less than 2 years on the job, many of them less than a year on the job, some of them in supervisory positions and some of them operating equipment, running directional drills that are threading through existing underground utilities, gas, electric, water, and data utilities. And so that was concerning to us. And just to give an example, we had our staff found a crew in Minneapolis that had been instructed to begin drilling right in the heart of the city through the street where there was a gas line marked. And the workers were basically refusing their orders to begin drilling because they didn't know where the gas line was. It hadn't actually been located, been daylighted, or visualized as required by law. And so they had said, look, you're going to need to send the foreman down here because we just don't feel safe going ahead and doing this. And unfortunately, that wasn't really the exception. We heard those stories persistently from many workers, not all the companies, right? And I think even from but this was from a pretty well-known and reputable company involved in both publicly funded and private sector work, right? Not a company that we think is a particularly irresponsible actor, but I think it's just a measure of the challenge in the industry. And so the provision of the bill, there's three parts. There's a training component. There is a component that has to do with broadband funding. But what we're here for today is that the Public Utilities Commission, and it's a very simple provision that would give the Public Utilities Commission the authority to investigate unreasonable interference with regulated utility operations by a telecommunications company, right, if that occurs. Now, that's a pretty high standard. And it's a provision that we think would be used quite rarely and maybe not at all, because just its existence would help telecommunications companies really focus on making sure that their conduct was appropriate. It's needed because there is no provision in current law that allows the Office of Pipeline Safety or any other state agency or local agency to hold the owner of the project, the telecommunications project, accountable for the work. And because we're having line strikes that occur from telecommunications contractors on a roughly daily basis in Minnesota, it is important that there be some provision to hold those actors accountable for their contracting practices. That's it, and happy to answer questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Prannis. Next on our list, we have Tom Dicklich, Executive Director for the Minnesota Building and Construction Trades. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tom Dicklich, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. The Minnesota Building Trades and our affiliated unions represent more than 70,000 skilled construction workers who build our state's transportation, water, and energy infrastructure across the state of Minnesota. I'm here today to support Representative Berg's House File 4659. Access to reliable, high-speed internet is a necessity for our members and their families and for all Minnesotans. Broadband is critical infrastructure, yet today, broadband installation is not held to the same high standards that we apply to every other infrastructure construction. Minnesota's public infrastructure is built and maintained with prevailing wage protections that prevent a race to the bottom and encourage contractors to invest in a skilled workforce. Meanwhile, our privately owned gas and electric infrastructure is built and maintained by equally skilled workers under the oversight of the Public Utilities Commission. Cable and broadband are the exception. Despite the fact that the industry receives hundreds of millions of dollars in public funding, workers lack prevailing wage protections, resulting in a race to the bottom. And despite the fact that telecommunications installers damage underground utilities on almost a daily basis, there are no minimum training requirements or oversight mechanisms to hold bad actors accountable. The North American Building Trades Unions were proud to support the historic investments in broadband infrastructure as part of the bipartisan infrastructure law. But if we don't act now to create basic standards and oversight, additional dollars will make a serious problem worse. The broadband industry already faces a critical shortage of skilled workers due to lack of training and high turnover rates that are natural consequences of low pay and high stress. While telecommunications lobbyists tout industry training programs, the sad fact is that most workers interviewed have never heard of the programs and won't be around long enough to get any benefit out of them. And while these lobbyists talk about the industry's safety record, what they don't tell you is that their safety metrics they cite don't include all of the contractors and subcontractors working on broadband projects. Worse, their metrics don't include line strikes, which pose the greatest risk to public safety. House File 4659 is a modest effort to set basic standards and put broadband on a path to success in Minnesota and has helped achieve in every other state. Building safe infrastructure that Minnesotans can rely on while creating family-supporting jobs for local workers is a priority. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And we had someone from the public sign up to testify, Luke Johnson, CEO of Meeker Cooperative Light and Power. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Luke Johnson, CEO and General Manager of Meeker Cooperative and Vibrant Broadband. We are a not-for-profit cooperative serving electricity and broadband to 8,000 electric members and 5,400 broadband subscribers, covering Meeker, McLeod, Renville, Kandy, Ojai, and Stearns counties. We've been providing broadband to our members in the and and surrounding areas since 2019. I'm here to share concerns on House File 4659. While this bill is well-intentioned, it poses significant financial and practical challenges for both applicants to the broadband grant program and the state's broadband industry as a whole. Firstly, mandating the substantial percentage of grants be reserved for applicants committing to implement specific workforce practices imposes requirements that may not align with the realities of the industry. The proposed legislation restricts competition and innovation, leading to higher costs for broadband expansion projects. Moreover, the stipulation to reserve increasing percentages of grants for applicants implementing workforce best practices impose additional financial strain on broadband providers, particularly smaller co-ops and startups who may struggle to meet the guidelines. Overall, while the legislation aims to promote workforce development and equitable access to broadband, its rigid requirements and financial implications will ultimately stifle innovation, limit competition, and hinder the timely expansion of broadband infrastructure, ultimately making it more difficult to get broadband to those unserved and underserved areas. In closing, I urge you to give serious consideration to the ramifications of this proposed legislation, as it will have the implications that it will have on available grant funds and the future accomplishments of DEED's Office of Broadband Development. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. And there are no other testifiers signed up. I will point out to members that there are some letters in your packet to take a look at. And with that, maybe look to members for discussion or any questions they might have. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Berg, this is from my reading, lines 3.1 through 3.3. We're down to 3.10. So this is about getting a prevailing wage, correct, and better trained, better, safer workers. That's the direction of all this, if I'm reading this right.
And Representative Mecklen, I also just want to point out that I want to let you to go ahead and have your question, but we want to try and stay focused as much as we can on the provisions that are within our jurisdiction, which is really only Section 4 in the end. But I want you to go ahead and feel free to ask your question if we can try to focus most on,
sure,
on what's in, because this is going to go to labor and industry next. But anyway, Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mecklen. Do you just want to discuss this more when we're in labor?
The answer
to your question.
We certainly can.
Yes.
We're both on labor, so I guess we can just do it there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you have any other questions, Representative Mecklen?
Not right now.
Okay. Does anyone else have questions for the author? Seeing none? Oh, Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Berg. You know, just a quick question, but, you know, we had a goal to reach every household in Minnesota by 2027. And so with this bill specifically, how is that going to affect that goal? Will we still be able to meet the goal, 2027 goal?
Representative Berg.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. I'll let the expert answer that for us.
Mr. Prentice.
Thank you, Chair Akam, Representative Altendorf. Certainly the intention of the bill is to support that. I'd say one thing that the Meeker co-op representative raised important questions that we're working through with the Minnesota Rural Electric Association and others. But one of the challenges that we've heard across the industry is retaining skilled workforce. And that actually will be particularly challenging when there's so much other work happening at the same time, particularly work that provides substantially better pay and benefits. And so we're really trying to make sure that the broadband work is competitive, that we're basically able to attract that workforce to efficiently and safely get that work done. But that's the goal, is to use this bill to help sustain and accelerate that work, not to slow it down.
One more. Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, just a follow-up question then. And then with the additional cost that's going to be coming with this, you know, who really absorbs that cost?
Thank you, Chair Acum, Representative Altendorf. So we don't, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. One is we think that when you operate with skilled workforce that knows what they're doing, when you don't have those levels of turnover, you're not constant. I mean, high levels of turnover in any business are costly, right, ultimately to the effectiveness. So is it when you have to make repairs to utilities, those costs get passed along. And so we often see, you know, stepping up a little bit in terms of workforce retention as cost neutral. But I think that's, certainly we believe this is an essential service that everyone needs to get and that those investments are important. We also think it needs to be done safely, right? I mean, if a gas line explosion happens, right, that's not just an economic cost, it's sort of an unacceptable outcome. And so our hope would be that we're looking at relatively consistent costs. I will say we've heard from all of the providers that costs are going up for everything in construction, for materials, for every component of this. And so there's no question that we look at rising costs regardless of this legislation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, and just to be clear, if it's great goals that we're going to be coming in at the same cost, but if we go over budget, who's absorbing that cost? Is it the consumer? Is it the state? Who absorbs this additional cost if we're going over what we predicted?
Mr. Prentice,
Representative Altendorf. So, I mean, I guess I can't really speak to like what the specific costs are in the bill, because this is actually, this is not a bill requiring prevailing wage. This is a bill that says that we will try to incentivize some workforce best practices that we think pay for themselves. And so I don't think we're not clear on the specific costs that are going to go over. We've heard from everyone that costs are going up quite a bit.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Representative Susan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment onto that. You know, we do talk about cost and the increased cost, and I appreciate your recognizing that. And I think one of the fundamental things, when you narrow the window and you narrow the amount of people that are available to do the work, you're fundamentally going to change the dynamic when it comes to who can do the work and how the bidding process will work. And so by nature, you're going to adversely increase the cost. And I think, time and time again, we're seeing this where we feel that regardless of the issue, because state money somehow is involved in a pass-through or whatnot, that we're going to demand that potentially not even real local workers are going to do the work. So if these are projects that are going out in rural Minnesota, and the contractor who literally lives 20 minutes away won't be able to do the work because the state legislature decided that they can't do it, I think it's a disservice. And if there's any piece of this legislation that's moving or limiting who or who cannot do the work or how the work can be bid, from a rural perspective, I don't think that's treating our local business and decision makers correctly. And I would ask that potentially come out if this bill does potentially move forward, because that is a worry. So thank you.
Any closing comments, Representative Berg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we could just take a moment to sort of address the representative's concerns.
Sure.
Really quick.
Thank you,
Brannis.
Chair Acum and Representative Swedzinski. We think the bill actually does the exact opposite. I mean, what we're seeing is a lot of out-of-state contractors coming in, right, paying wages below what Minnesota workers typically make. This bill would not prevent any Minnesota contractor or any Minnesota worker, and it would provide a reduction in turnover that is the real challenge in terms of being that workforce. So we completely agree we want Minnesota contractors, workers, and that skilled workforce, and this bill helps support that.
Follow up, and I just also want to, I don't think you were here when I started out, the only provision that is within.
That's fine, Madam Chair. I'll hold on.
Okay, thank you. And with that, any closing comments, Representative Berg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to reiterate that we have a real opportunity to make broadband accessible and equitable, especially with the federal funding that we are going to get, understanding it's not ongoing. And I think it's a really exciting opportunity. And just making certain with those highly skilled workers that we are not having the accidents that we see and hear all the time. Representative Ream shared it in ag, an experience she had. And I mean, I've just got plenty of pictures of accidents. And so I just really appreciate the time to present this and ask for your support.
I renew my motion that House File 4659 be re-referred to the Committee on Labor and Industry. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay.
No.
The motion prevails and the bill is re-referred. Thank you, Representative Berg.
No.
Next on the agenda, we have House File 4688. Representative Hemmingson Yeager is going to work their way to the table. And while she does that, Representative Yeager moves House File 4688 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I see that there's an amendment, the A3. So Representative Hemmingson Yeager moves the A3 to get the bill in the shape she would like. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. With all of that, Representative Hemmingson Yeager, please tell us about your bill.
Great, thank you. So this is the first of two bills related to geothermal technology. I've just started getting into it this year, which I find very exciting because it's another thing that we can add to our renewable energy portfolio as we move forward. This bill, 4688, would create a working group at the Public Utilities Commission to examine regulatory issues surrounding the deployment of thermal energy networks by regulated gas utilities. I find this one particularly interesting because it's groups coming together. It's labor, it's energy advocacy organizations, as well as the utilities coming together to figure out, as we embark on this next step in our journey, what is the best way to regulate this new type of energy. It is bipartisan, and I think with that, maybe I'll just leave it to the testifiers to kind of discuss more about it.
I have one person that's signed up, Charles Sutton. Welcome to committee, Mr. Sutton. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Chair Agum, members of the committee, my name is Charles Sutton. I'm here today on behalf and my client, GeoExchange, a trade organization representing the geothermal heat pump industry. Geothermal heat pumps are an efficient, climate-friendly way to heat and cool homes and buildings. Because they use the constant temperature just under the ground as a heat source, they remain efficient even in some of the coldest temperatures. This benefits individual business owners, but also reduces building owners, but also reduces strain on the grid and provides resiliency benefits. Geothermal heat pumps can be installed in residential and commercial-sized buildings, and around the country, we are seeing examples of connected district-scale systems being deployed to heat and cool entire neighborhoods. We'd like to thank Representative Hemmingson Yeager for introducing both this bill, 4688 and 4689, which I know will be up next, which will help advance the deployment of geothermal systems in Minnesota. HF 4688 will create a working group at the Public Utilities Commission to examine how gas utilities can deploy network geothermal systems within the regulated context. You know, this mirrors some similar work that was done in Illinois over the past year, and essentially will help create a shared understanding of stakeholders, the commission, and the legislature on ways that our natural gas utilities can deploy these in the public interest. I'll say this builds on some work that the legislature began 3 years ago with a bipartisan bill, the Natural Gas Innovation Act, which was authored by Representative Stevenson, that allowed our natural gas utilities to pilot some of these, pilot a bunch of innovation projects, including these network geothermal systems. And so this doesn't authorize any new ones. It simply says, you know, once we learn from this pilot project, we're gonna take away some lessons as the natural gas utilities deploy these within that pilot process. And in the meantime, we can start having some discussions about, how would these be deployed feasibly and in the public interest within that regulated context. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Sutton. There's nobody else who has signed up to testify. So with that, maybe we'll turn to members' questions or discussion. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of going over the membership, I think one concern I have right away, just kind of want to flag it for the author and see if you have any response to this. When we talk about creating working groups, especially around new ideas, my big thing here is how is Greater Minnesota and the communities that a lot of us represent going to be put into this? Is there any thought about making sure that some of these people are going to be appointed come from, our northern communities, our southern communities, and people that maybe have a bigger interest in those things, so they don't all come out of one place?
Representative Hemmingson Yeager.
Yeah, definitely interested and adding something in there that would specifically call that out. I know, like I can see 1.19 says cities, but you're right, it does not specify exactly like where or population or size. So happy to think about how we can make that more representative of our state.
Great, and this will be laid over, so there'll be opportunities for that. Representative Igo, did you have anything more?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just add too, like, I just think that we could clean up a little bit of the membership to help with that, right? Even like when you say utilities, that could mean anyone from an XL to a small little muni to or a co-op. I just, if we want to make sure we have a good broad discussion here when we talk about this from all perspectives, I think if we just do a little cleanup there so we have a really good broad group, that'd be really helpful to the bill.
Any response for coming?
Let's meet up offline and talk about it.
Okay, that sounds great. Any other questions? Representative Rarick.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I heard you say, the bill author, that it was a bipartisan bill, but I was just looking and I'm wondering, I don't see any authors from the other side of the aisle. I'm wondering if you could explain what you mean.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
I read the wrong line in my notes and that the past provisions were bipartisan, but you're right, there it's not bipartisan on this one yet. So hope I can get maybe Representative Igo after we meet.
Representative Rarick, did you have any other questions?
No, I just thought we should be correct when we're saying if it's bipartisan and it's not. So I may have been in the past, but it's not right now. So.
Thank you for that clarification. Any other questions or discussion? Any final comments on the bill, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager?
Just kind of, again, just want to highlight how I really appreciate kind of many different aspects coming together to really talk together about how we can best move forward. So appreciate the feedback. The feedback to add in the state agencies came from one of the state agencies that said we should probably have people who have permitting regulating authority in there too. Just want to highlight and draw your attention to the joint letter of support from the utilities, labor, and energy advocacy organizations, and would just appreciate your consideration and support.
Great. With that, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager renews her motion that House File 4688 be laid over, and the bill is laid over. And the representative's going to stay right there because now she'll present House File 4689. So Representative Hemmingson-Yeager moves House File 4689 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative, please tell us about this bill.
Thank you again. This is House File 4689, and I don't want to kind of repeat everything that Mr. Sutton talked about with the technology, but again, really excited to be taking part in how we can shape our future with energy, conservation, and renewables. This one specifically creates a heat exchange system rebate program. Kind of reminds me of just the ability to kind of get some people over the hump and kind of allow them to, they want to invest in geothermal, they might not have enough like capital to quite get it done, and this would help those people do that. Again, joint letter of support from utilities, labor, and energy advocacy organizations. And I will tell you right now, I'm continuing to dig into this, and the conversations continue to ensure that this bill can be as effective and as efficient as possible.
And it looks like you have a couple of testifiers for this bill. John Pollard. IOUOE Local 49. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Pollard. I'm the Legislative Director for the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 49. I have the privilege of representing 15,000 men and women who operate heavy machinery in Minnesota, North, and South Dakota. Our union represents those operators who build infrastructure across the state of Minnesota in all sectors, including energy. Our members perform construction and maintenance work on traditional thermal energy plants, but also on wind and solar. We also build and maintain the natural gas distribution system that almost two-thirds of our neighbors' homes are heated with. As the state looks to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the building sector, geothermal heat pumps are a promising option and one that will create job opportunities for our members. The benefit of geothermal heat pumps, as mentioned, is that because they are pulling heat from the underground rather than the air, they can operate more efficiently at lower temperatures. These systems can also be deployed at scale in a connected system with the potential to reduce emissions across entire neighborhoods. While there are many benefits to geothermal heat pumps, the upfront cost can be expensive. That is why we appreciate and support House File 4689, which will help reduce the upfront cost for building owners. We also appreciate the inclusion of a preference for projects that utilize registered apprenticeship programs. Registered apprenticeship remains the gold standard in workforce training and is an important component of training the next generation of skilled construction workers. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hemmingson, for carrying the bill, and we appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Pollard. And next on our list, we have Willie Miley, Regulatory Director with Darcy Solutions. Welcome to committee. Once you get settled, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Acom and committee members. I'm Willie Miley, the Regulatory Director for Darcy Solutions. We're a geothermal heating and cooling company based out of New Brighton, Minnesota, and our company grew out of technology that was initially developed at the University of Minnesota. Darcy Solutions created an innovative geothermal system that utilizes groundwater as the thermal source and achieves significant efficiency gains. Our systems do not withdraw groundwater, but we simply flow groundwater through a specially designed in-well heat exchanger to tap into the vast renewable thermal energy in aquifers. We support House File 4689 because it will help accelerate the widespread adoption of geothermal heating and cooling across Minnesota. This geothermal heat exchange system rebate program will enable installation of more clean energy heating and cooling systems, which will help make progress on the Minnesota Climate Action Framework goals. We're now on an impressive path in Minnesota towards decarbonizing electric generation. But building HVAC systems are a large emission source, accounting for approximately 12% of total energy consumption across our economy. And building heating systems are particularly challenging to electrify. One significant challenge is that widespread use of primarily electric heating systems would put significant strain on the power grid during peak times. However, utilizing geothermal renewable energy for building heating and cooling addresses this problem with the most efficient thermal energy source that is available. Building HVAC needs are unique, and decisions on HVAC system modifications to increase efficiency and reduce carbon emissions need to be made by each individual building owner. A similar rebate program already exists in Minnesota for air source heat pumps. By also providing rebates for geothermal systems, Minnesota building owners will have more options to utilize the renewable HVAC system that makes the most sense for their particular building. So in closing, I urge you to please advance this bill, as this geothermal system incentive program will assist Minnesota building owners with another option for installing renewable HVAC at their property while also advancing Minnesota's overall clean energy goals. Thank you, Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Miley, for your testimony. Any questions or Representative Brary?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I don't think I heard testimony as to what does it typically cost to do geothermal in a single family home. You've got a $6,000 rebate, and what does it typically cost to put a geothermal system in a single family home?
I'm going to defer to Mr. Sutton, if that's okay.
Thank you, Representative, or Chair Aiko, Representative Rarick. It will, talking to the industry, it obviously will depend on a number of factors, including whether you're building a new home, have an existing home, you know, the amount of internal ductwork that has to be done. But, the estimates I've heard are somewhere between, $22,000, and then it could always go all the way up to, $45,000, or sort of what I'd heard for a single-family home.
Wow, Madam Chair.
Representative Rarick.
So I just had my gas-powered furnace go out, and the A-coil also went out. So I had to replace the entire air conditioning and heating system, the whole thing. So that was a little over $8,000. So you said $22,000 to $45,000. Okay. So in the rebate is $6,000. So that's still a huge departure from if somebody wanted to just put in a high efficiency gas furnace, which is what I did, and I got a $750 rebate. It was a little over 4,000. I think it was 4,700 for the furnace itself. So it's still an incredibly expensive endeavor to do. What does it cost for a multifamily housing unit or commercial building? Typically, what's the range? Because you've got a 5%, which, or not to exceed 50,000. So how much does it cost to do it for for that kind of a building.
Chair Ingham, Representative Burke, one thing I would mention as well is just in response to your previous comment, that there's also a federal tax credit worth 30% of the value of the project as well. So that's just one other factor for homeowners to consider. The multifamily or commercial will largely, again, I think it's going to range, and it'll depend on the size of the building and the thermal load, as well as that question of a new building versus one where you have to do significant changes to the ductwork is going to be a big factor in making the difference. I know maybe, I don't know if Mr. Wiley wants to speak at all to some of those, the commercial size costs or any specifics.
Madam Chair, while the testifier is coming down, can I ask a quick question of Representative Rarick?
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, Representative.
Give you some leeway.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rarick, since you. You brought up this instance. Were you able to find a qualified union electrician to do the work on that, or did you? Were you not able to find a qualified individual to replace that appliance for? Did you have to go out? Out of network to get that done,
or in that other body?
Yeah.
Representative Burke, did Mr. Miley want to come down to address that question, or no? Okay. Maybe we don't have the specifics. We're moving on.
Well, I was just waiting for her to respond.
Well, I mean from the question from Representative Rarick. All right, Representative Rarick.
So as I'm sure Representative Garofalo knows, an HVAC system is different than a automation system, which is what my husband, the union electrician, would install. But he could have changed the thermostat, but he could not change the HVAC system. But thanks for the question.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want some clarification. Line 3, it would be 3.9. So it's in the prioritization section of the bill. So when we say for single-family homes not currently served by a natural gas utility, does that mean like homes that would be on a fuel oil system or have a propane tank? Would those be houses that are prioritized?
Representative Hemmings and Yeager.
Yes.
Mr. Sutton. Both. Either. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then going through the prioritization for 1, 2, 3, does one take priority over two, two over three, or is it just kind of all of them have the same equal weight?
Representative Hemmings and Yeager.
I see how you're reading that differently. I'm going to see if Mr. Sutton has a response, but otherwise I have an idea too.
Mr. Sutton?
I think I had read it as sort of equal weight, so all of those are factors that could be, lead to a priority for the application.
Representative Igo, anyway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the reason I ask it is because when we talk about doing rebates for energy, and we already talked that the cost is a little higher.
Little.
What I don't want to see, What I don't want to see happen is the people who have lots of money are going to be the ones that are going to take advantage of this system. If we're going to try and do energy efficiency and bring down energy prices and rates for people by having them have more efficient systems, we need to find ways to get into those people that it would drastically affect. Because when you lower someone's cost of energy, you lift them out of poverty, you give them more prosperity. So what I don't want to see is the state creating another program where the people in the 1% are filing to take hard-earned taxpayer dollars to make their homes more efficient, whereas communities with we've already done that with EV cars. But I think you see the point I'm trying to make. I want to make sure that all Minnesotans will have the chance to go for this, and it doesn't just turn into the top 5% of our state getting a handout.
And I think that Representative Hemmings-Yeager, I'm going to let her respond. I think there was some talk about potentially making some modifications to the bill, which may address part of what you're referring to. Representative Hemmings-Yeager.
Yeah, so I agree. I want to make sure that we're lifting people up and that we're going in this together. I will say, too, that's why we have the prioritization here. Part of the discussions I'm having is thinking about the multi-family housing and how we could probably be a little bit more effective and efficient if we think more on a network geothermal scale. So that's just kind of, since you alluded to, that's kind of where I'm thinking of going.
And the bill will be laid over, so there will be continued efforts on it. So Representative Igo, anything else?
I'm good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions or comments from members? Seeing Representative Rarick?
Just a closing small little comment. As Representative Igo just pointed out, to do this, it's literally five times to 10 times higher than just doing a natural gas furnace, high efficiency natural gas furnace. The $6,000 rebate is more than I spent on my gas furnace. I just replaced it in January. So it's just, you got to think about the cost, I think, too, at some point here.
No.
Any closing comments, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager?
Sure. So you kind of reminded me, back at one of my kids' birthday parties, our air conditioning went out. And, of course, since I have two summer babies, it was nice and 85 and humid and my house is full of people. And so we had to replace our entire HVAC system, too. And I think ours was like $7,500 or $8,000 for the whole thing. And shortly thereafter, we got solar panels and we're like, oh, this will be great on our energy bill. And what we saw was our electricity costs went down, but we weren't noticing a huge change in our natural gas. And that's because the price of natural gas is constantly fluctuating and going up. So that's kind of when I think about like going to geothermal, I think of kind of like that down the road savings that you're going to be having. It is a lot of upfront cost now, which is where hopefully this rebate program will help get those people to be able to make that decision to change, knowing about the future cost savings. Thank you.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager renews her motion that House File 4689 be laid over and the bill is laid over. And we have no other business. You guys were so efficient today that we are done early. I get to give you some time back. Go enjoy. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.